Kiwi show of Come and Tell Pro. It's a Vinnie Eastwood show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood show.com. One of the great things about AmericanFreedomRadio.com is that, you know, we start the day live with the Vinnie Eastwood show, then we roll on to the Intel Hub, and from then on, nothing but great shows. You know, just a fabulous network. I recommend you keep listening. Now, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. Wind farms suddenly been revealed, as if there's any surprise, that they're twice as costly as gas or coal. Any surprises, anyone? No? Okay. Yeah, it would figure that energy that you generate off of natural processes would be way more expensive than other energy you generate over natural processes that have been used for ages. The true cost of Britain's massive expansion of wind farms has been revealed. It costs nearly twice as much to generate electricity from an offshore wind farm as it does from a conventional power station, the Scientific Reporter has concluded. And while the price of wind power is expected to fall in the coming decade, the researchers admit there is a slight chance it could rise even further. The study comes amid Britain's Dash for Wind, one of the biggest engineering projects of the last few decades. Over the next 10 years, the government wants up to 10,000 new wind turbines to be built at sea and on land to meet tough climate change targets. The report from the UK Energy Research Centre, a government-funded academic think tank, said the costs of offshore wind power were underestimated in the mid-2000s. Instead of costs falling, as predicted in the last 5 years, the cost of buying and installing turbines and towers at sea has gone up by 51%. Once the bill for building and maintaining an offshore wind farm is spread over the 25-year lifespan of a typical farm, each kilowatt hour of electricity now costs 15p. That's nearly twice as expensive as electricity from conventional coal and gas power stations, which costs 8p a unit, and more than nuclear, which costs 10p a unit. A unit of electricity from an onshore wind turbine costs 9p, the report says. The author of the study, Dr. Robert Gross, predicts that the costs are likely to fall over the next decade to around 11p. Oh, isn't that nice? However, there's a very small chance they could soar up to nearly 19p. How is this scientific? How is this rational? And how is this going to solve the energy crisis? It ain't. That's not the point. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will, and we'll be right back.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Leggiadro viso, il fiato in
Boom, boom, boom. Hey, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and Vinnie with a Y. It's the V and the I and the double NY. Why would you go and listen to Vinnie? Goodness knows. Now, I've kind of, interestingly enough, gotten sick of talking about climate change, as you do. So, on to something a little lighter. Public outcry is working to stop GMOs. It's from Jonathan Benson, one of the staff writers at naturalnews.com. It's Mike Adams, the Health Ranger's website. The fight against genetic modification seems like a never-ending uphill battle. But Lord Melchett, former director of Greenpeace and current policy director of the Soil Association, says that despite what the biotechnology giants would have you believe, most nations of the world are rejecting GMs and just thus presenting their takeover from the planet. Many people in Europe may be unaware of the extent of the resistance to genetically modified food in places like China and India because they swallow the GM industry line that is supported all across the world. He is cited as saying in The Independent, "I have to say that we are now with GM leaves me very, very optimistic." Okay, so there's decent resistance going on there. And I remember somebody talking about, you know, how a lot of desertification of farmland in India, right? And they're saying it's due to climate change. And damn it, I've been pulled back into it. And, well, the actual reason for the desertification of a lot of farmland in India is the fact that Monsanto has encouraged all the farmers, instead of using natural fertilization methods where they use cow dung and put them into cow horns and then bury them for a year in order to make their fertilizer, they're now instead using horrendous chemical fertilizers which degrade the soil, suck all the moisture out of it, and leave it as a desert. Not climate change, chemical poisoning of the soil. And that's probably one of the reasons why these GM giants are getting a bit of resistance. Now, a quick visit to the website of the GM giant Monsanto, for instance, indicate that what Melchett says is true. Fancy, deceptive marketing and design tactics would have you believe that the world is lovingly embracing the alleged wonders of GM crops. But this is hardly the case. In fact, the only reason GMs have even found any foothold at all is because, in some countries, they have been deceitfully approved beneath the radar of the general public. But as the general public has begun to learn more about GMs, and if you learn anything about GMs, you become anti-GM. Isn't that interesting? And the fact that they are dishonestly hidden and unlabeled in the US food supply, things are beginning to change. In recent years, several new GM crops have been defeated due to public opposition. What were you saying, Will?
Well, that's the beauty of free market. That's the beauty of educating the public. That's the beauty of not saying, we need the government to do this and moaning all the time and protesting like they are in Europe at the moment about government funding cuts to different sectors and all that. All these just big government stooges. I wouldn't even call them leftists or rightists. It's just people who just want big corporate establishments to do their dirty work for them, change their nappies for them.
Oh well,
but
just
but then
negative, you and, know, and austerity measures are good for people.
Oh, they don't cost countries. They don't indebt the third world at all. but you said India and China are resisting GE crops. I was, you know, sorry to not sound racist here, but do the Indians and Chinese resist anything? They're useless. Freaking. I mean, there's like. No, I'm not kidding here. I mean.
Well, I'd say the Chinese do resist things.
If you want to find a slave, it'd be like a gay Indian man. Like, I'm not kidding you, but if you want to find like the perfect, like, willing dupe, obedient slave. If I was going to like tarnish the you know, tar someone with a brush here, would be Indians and Chinese. They're just perfect little slave masters, you know, like not slave masters, slave dupes. They just follow orders. They think it's honourable and loyalty and honour. No, it's called getting raped. stupid little, you know what I mean? Don't you
what
see
you
that
got against
around?
Being raped, Will? I mean, come on.
There's 2.2 billion people, at least. It's more like 2.5, actually. 2.5 billion people between India and China. Where's Chinese against the New World Order? Where's Indians against the New World Order? They've got three times the population of the United States of America. I haven't seen one blog. I don't see any of them interested. I know some very smart, intelligent Indian people that I went to university and school with. And you tell them about this stuff and they're just, well, I don't care if the money's fake. I work for PricewaterhouseCoopers. You know, or, you know, I don't care what you think about global warming. I believe entirely in it. You know, it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable how certain cultures, who the British went and enslaved and compartmentalized and mechanized, have remained so for the last few hundred years.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we can't find the anti-New World Order Indian movement because we don't read Sanskrit. But as the general public has begun to learn more about GMs,
I know.
And the fact that they are dishonestly hidden and unlabeled in the US food supply, I mean, things are beginning to change. In recent years, several new GM crops have been defeated due to the old public opposition. You know, America's where GM has been told to be a huge success, but that's just a lie, you know. In a recent Sustainable Planet Forum in Lyon, France, if anyone tells you this, ask them, where is GM wheat? Okay, Monsanto had it ready to go, but it was stopped by American farmers. Ask them, where is GM version of alfalfa, the fourth most commonly grown crop in the world? American farmers went to court to stop it being commercialized. And continue efforts needed
exactly
to stop
the
GM crops from gaining any further ground. And with enough dedication, the outspoken public may even help reverse the tide. Now, the
Indians, why I picked on the Indians is because they grow certain, Monsanto exploits India to such an extent where there should be lobbies over there or just renegade groups of farmers who are tired of having their soil destroyed. Their soil quality destroyed after a couple of crops, with these Monsanto suicide gene things, and you know, the producer just said it's because they're too busy working in China and trying to buy food. Well, you know, nice excuse, but no, not buying it. Sorry, you know, that's even more reason for the scum to wake up. You know, like that's if you're having the pinch put on you to that. Even more. Isn't that the reason why a lot of Westerners are waking up? But it's the reason why they stay asleep. Now, I don't really buy that. There's no excuse for it. You're having your country poisoned. You're being exploited. You're being herded into sweatshops and slave labor, literal cotton pickers. And you can, you know, you've got access now to the internet and books and you know, the growing movement against tyranny. And yet you join with just worthless control valve organizations like the UN. So these guys really do need to pick up because they're our slaves currently in all this scenario in terms of all the crops. And they could just say no to Monsanto, no to the UN, and overturn this in a heartbeat. But yeah.
But they don't.
Good little slaves. Thank you. Thank you, India. Thank you, China, for being such idiots.
Yeah.
That's from David Rockefeller. That's a message from David Rockefeller. Thank you guys for being idiots and having tribal wars while we raped and pillaged you.
Yeah, you're fabulous. What we'll do is we'll give you an award, India, and we'll will tell you that what you're doing is good for the environment with the thousands of farmers that are committing suicide every year because the bloody Terminator seeds that Monsanto is selling them means that they can't make a profit off of their crops anymore because they can't save the seeds and regrow them the next year. So they have to go back to Monsanto and buy more Terminator seeds with loans. And then when they have their farms and everything disclosed on, they commit suicide. And suicide rates are up dramatically. And it's pretty easy to manipulate an uneducated population that have very little communication errors. But at the same time, and this is the interesting part, India is now becoming a center for the development of organic farming techniques, permaculture, and various other techniques of growing good food with high nutritional value that is not under the control of Monsanto. So,
yeah, they're right.
I'm very happy with that. But
they are right into this Rudolf Steiner method of farming, which I think is a good, I don't totally agree with it, but it's a good counter to Monsanto's tyranny and to the UN's dictate. But it's still only like 0.5% of what the current crop area is. It's tiny. It's absolutely tiny. Because, you know, over the cross-pollination and all the rest of the problems that these farmers will face. But, and the soil degradation being one of the largest things, with the water management and everything else. But yeah, people—if people think my previous comments are racist, then they just need to listen to a lot of the real racists who rejected going to the Commonwealth Games in India on the basis that they had terrorists over there and they might get blown up by Al Qaeda just because they're going to India. That's one of the most ridiculous newscasts. It just preceded the recent this commencement of the Commonwealth Games. But yeah, so that's real racism. I'm just critiquing how they really, really don't have true resistance groups over there. And I think it's just sad that a third of the planet's left out like that. Not left out, but kind of leaves themselves out. I know there's censorship going on, just like in North Korea. But still, in India, they call themselves a relatively free society. And you have to remember that they are highly educated. Really, that most of that, there's an even split between men and women over there of university attendance. And there are more engineers per capita than anywhere else in the world. Like qualified, graduated engineers in particular. Electrical engineers, software engineers, very smart people. So they are educated mainstream-wise. It's probably the problem.
Yeah, education is no guarantee of intelligence, is it?
No. I mean, I know so many Indians that come over here and they're driving buses or working menial jobs and they are, like, qualified. Yeah, qualified in software engineering or you know, some sort of computer engineering. Very, you know, civil engineering is another real common one. And it's even amongst the women, it's an even split. It's quite an educated society. They can identify problems, they just don't want to do anything about it. It's like, you know, oh no, it's not my place, that's the elected government's place to make decisions for me.
That's not entirely different from the scum here in our country, man, you know.
But they come from a very hierarchical system. The thing is, we do have anti-New World Order groups in this country, as small as they are, and we do have large anti-New World Order groups in the United States, although they might not be significant enough to determine who's in power yet. But in India, there just aren't any. I mean, it's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah. I mean, and does India have a police state where all these anti-New World Order groups that pop up are ruthlessly crushed? I don't think so. I know that the police are really, really corrupt over there, and basically is if for want of a few rupees, you can get out of any crime you want.
They have the caste system. I think that's the root of it. I think that's part of the root. You know, the 21-tier, I believe it is, caste system, where Brahmins are at the top. And they have all this kind of like bloodline intermarriage thing going on. It's pretty much what we have over in the West here, discreetly hidden behind the veil of societies and whatnot, and social hierarchies, you know, depending on what neighbourhood in Auckland you're in, or what neighbourhood in London you're in. But in India, it's actual pinned, labelled, like, if you work with your hands, if you are denoted a certain way, if you wear a T-shirt, for instance, you're of a lower caste, all this sort of stuff, and it's real judgmental, and it's real segregated, and it's real out in your face, and people say, oh, it's improved over the last 20-something years. It may have, but there's still, like, acid attacks going on. It's not pick on India Day, but if you want to look at how a segregated, compartmentalized, slave-driven society should run, I mean, just look at it. Like, it's a perfect little British model.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Get them to pick us our tea for us.
Oh, don't you love being slaves in India there?
Green tea, thank you very much. Mr. Patel? Yeah. Want some green tea while that's fine.
Well, what I found
green tea
funny
is about 20 times the fluoride too.
Oh, really?
20, you know, if you have a couple of green tea, it's about 20 parts per million, as opposed to one part per million, the fluoride of municipal water.
Well, no wonder green tea's so good for you.
Yeah, it's a tea plant actually absorbs fluoride through its fruits. It fixes it.
God, why is it, you know, I hate having to be discerning all the time, you know, because it's like, oh, God, there's so much stuff being pushed on me, like 24/7 from 1,360 degrees directions, right? I cannot, under any circumstances, just suddenly believe anything that I hear, you know? Green tea is good for you. Actually, it's bad for you.
Fruits. Well, I'm not saying it's entirely bad.
No, but, you know, there's also the other elements, you know, like if you have to eat lots and lots of fruit, vegetables, it turns out that they're all bloody GMO that give you cancer and destroy your genetic code. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, where it's all about making you sick and poisoning the living bejesus out of you. And we'll be back in a month. The New World Order. That's up on gorillamedia.co.nz. Source, the Daily Telegraph.
I thought we weren't going to talk about global warming.
Yeah, I know. And yet, it keeps popping up, you know? It's like swine flu. Now, Bilderberg, whether you believe it's part of a sinister conspiracy, will lead inexorably to one world government where you think it's an innocent high-level talking shop. There's one thing that it can't be denied. It knows which way the wind is blowing. At its June meeting in Sitges, Spain, I'm sure you pronounce that, unreported and held in camera, as is Bilderberg's way, some of the world's most powerful CEOs rubbed shoulders with notable academics and leading politicians. They included the chairman of Fiat, the Irish Attorney General, Paul Gallagher, and I'm pretty sure they've got a similar thing to the Logan Act, so that's probably illegal too. In fact, is a Bilderberg group meeting even legal? You know. The US Special Representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, Richard Holbrooke, that's a very, very interesting one. Holbrooke's been there before. We're not your slaves, Holbrooke!
Well, then it is illegal for elected congressmen to attend secret meetings. And to discuss politics in secret is illegal. So Bohemian Grove, once again, is illegal too.
Oh, interesting. And also Kissinger, Bill Gates, Dick Pearl, the Queen of the Netherlands, Beatrix, the editor of The Economist. I mean, these people are definitely not Z-list, in other words, you know, which is what makes one particular item in the group's discussion agenda so tremendously significant, if you can spot the one, I mean. The 58th Bilderberg meeting will be held in Sitges, Spain on the 3rd to the 6th of June 2010. The conference will deal mainly with financial reform, security, cyber technology, energy, Pakistan, Afghanistan, world food problem, global cooling, social networking, medical science, and EU-US relations. That's right, global cooling. Which means one of two things. Either it was a printing error, all the global elite is perfectly well aware that the global cooling represents a far more serious and imminent threat to the world than global warming, but is far from willing to admit it behind closed doors. Let me explain briefly why this bombshell is waiting to explode. Almost every government in the Western world, from the USA to Britain and all other EU states to Australia and New Zealand, is currently committed to a policy of decarbonisation. This, in turn, is justified to increasingly sceptical electorates on the ground that man-made CO2 is a prime driver of dangerous global warming and must therefore be reduced drastically, at no matter what social, economic or environmental cost. In the 80s and 90s, the global elite had run a nice hot weather to support their scientifically dubious claims, but now they don't. Winters are getting colder, fuel bills are rising in the name of combating climate change, NACH, and the wheels are starting to come off the anthropogenic global warming bandwagon. Ordinary people resisting two decades of concerted brainwashing are starting to notice. All this, of course, spells big trouble for the global power elite, as well as leading to food shortages, as, for example, it becomes harder to grow wheat in northerly latitudes, adding, of course, to such already present disasters as biofuels and the rejection of GM. Global cooling is going to find electorates increasingly angry that they have been sold a pup. Our fuel bills have risen inexorably, our countryside, our views and our property values have been ravaged by hideous wind farms, our holidays have been made more expensive, our cost of living has been driven up by green taxes, our freedoms have been curtailed in any number of pettily irritating ways, from what kind of light bulbs we're permitted to use to how we dispose of our rubbish, and to what end? If man-made global warming was really happening and a problem we really might possibly have carried on putting on with all these constraints on our liberty and assaults on our income, but if it turns out to have been a myth. And biofuel, well then, all bets are off. The next few years are going to be interesting. Watch the global power elite squirming to reposition itself as it slowly distances itself from anthropogenic global warming. Who? Us? No, we never thought of it more than a quaint theory. And tries to find new ways of justifying green taxation and control, like ocean acidification and biodiversity. I mean, you'll notice sly shifts in policy spin. In Britain, for example, Chris Little Chicken Hume's suicidal Dash for Wind will be reinvented as a vital step towards energy security. There will be less talk of combating climate change and more talk of mitigation. You'll hear enviro-Nazis like Obama, science czar John Holdren avoid reference to global warming like the plague, preferring the more reliable, vague phrase global climate disruption. And you know what the worst thing is? If we allow them to, they're going to get away with it. Our duty as free citizens over the next few years is to make sure that they don't. Al Gore, George Soros, Bill Gates, Carol Browner, John Holdren, Barack Obama, David Cameron, Ed Miliband, Tim Yao, Michael Mann, Ted Turner, Robert Redford, Phil Jones, Chris Hune, John Howard. Yes, really. He was supposed to be conservative, but he was the man kicked off of Australia's ETS. Julia Gillard, Kevin Rudd, Yivo Dubois, Rajendra Pachauri. The list of the guilty goes on, each in its own way. And whether through ignorance, naivety, idealism or cynicism, it doesn't really matter, for the result has been the same. They have done is hit a bit to push the greatest con trick in the history of science, forcing on global consumers the biggest bill in the history of taxation, using global warming as an excuse to extend the reach of government further than it ever has before. It's time we put a stop to this. In the US, the Tea Party movement is showing us the way. We need to punish these dodgy politicians at the ballot box. We need to ensure that those scientists guilty of malfeasance are at the very least thrown out of the jobs which we taxpayers have been funding these last decades. We need to ensure that corporatist profiteers are no longer able to benefit from the distortion and corruption of the markets which result from green regulation. We need a global warming Nuremberg. That in from the Telegraph.
Yeah, Vinny, I mean, James is dead right there, and I'm glad he's in there writing some good articles. It's unfortunate the Tea Party movement's now been steered away by some fake shills too. But yeah, I mean, in New Zealand here, our environment minister and climate change exec is a guy by the name of Nick Smith. And he, as you'd know, Vinny, explicitly in 2005 actually wrote an article that I would agree with 100%. This shows how people can flip-flop. Against the climate changes and against the emissions trading scheme that Labor was proposing whilst Labor were in power. He gets in power, he follows suit. Just as I told some of these fake conservatives they would, because they have to follow global government, they have to follow the global dictate. They have to listen to their masters, they're not in charge once they're elected. And this guy, Nick Smith, didn't he just completely contradict everything he said in 2005? He completely contradicted everything, and no one really pulled him up on it. No one. No one in mainstream media pulled him up on it. A few blogs pulled him up on it.
Because they don't even remember. They don't even remember, bro. They got the memory of a freaking goldfish, you know?
What, Lady Gaga concert? Mm. But that's just... I know, they're freaking idiots, and you call them out on it, and they just go, oh, we're too small, we're understaffed. We got 24 people at MTV dancing around to Lady Gaga. We don't have any resources. But
speaking of which, MTV has now gone down in New Zealand.
Good.
Isn't that great?
Good.
You know? Fantastic.
Die,
you scumbags.
From the bottom of my heart, die, you fake shills. Because even if you look at the article, you can see the fake little puppets. I just want to say some names, but yeah. The two little retards they've got fronting that show. I'm glad they're unemployed now. Enjoy tyranny. Enjoy losing your income. Enjoy them destroying your dollar. Hope it's worth it for all the Lady Gaga you watched. Hope it's a worthy trade-off. Okay? Now, back to Nick Smith and that scumbag. Why he's a lying, treasonous piece of trash, just like John Key. John Key said he'd never, in this country, on video, anyone go to YouTube right now, says John Key lies about GST. Yeah? Or just Google it. John Key, New Zealand Prime Minister, former Merrill Lynch, former Federal Reserve Bank, head of derivatives, said he would never put up the goods and service tax in New Zealand to 15% because he wanted to grow our economy. That's a direct quote from him. He wanted to grow the economy, not reduce it. Sound agreeable? I said, yeah, yes, okay. Don't agree with him. Everything that sounds agreeable when he said that about a year ago. Now he's changed our mind, and people just say, oh, well, the economy's got worse, don't you understand? And these are things he has to do because, yeah, and look, he's given income tax cuts, and isn't this great? And, yeah. You want to. They literally told people, like Charlie Veach does cynically, he gets into malls and goes, go shopping. Shopping's good for the economy. They actually said, I actually heard that on the news in a serious, straight faced way. Last week, saying all New Zealanders need to buy up through to the Christmas period. That's the only way to keep the economy strong. They were for real.
And, you know, and the and things saying, that are jokes to us are serious to the yeah. general public, you know?
But he's saying, so go out, buy everything. I'm just going to increase the tax on everything. A blanket tax which shouldn't even exist. Taxing food is so immoral, so wrong. Putting 15% tax on bread and butter is so evil. I don't even know where to start. Like, but people, once you set a lie in motion and do it over 200-300 years, people are suckers, you know? People don't understand any fundamentals. They don't want them to. They don't want to understand the real political debate between liberty and tyranny. I just want them to understand key. Like, how about our mayoral debate last night, Vinny? You know, I couldn't even watch it.
No, I want to talk about this.
They said it's between Banks and Brown only. They said there are a lot of candidates, but in the end of the day, it comes down to two people. And it's like always, the lie is hidden in the premise, and then they run away with the debate after the initial lie because that hoodwinks and castrates any scope for debate.
Yeah, and they ensure that real candidates who say damaging things about the government and the super city and the enslavement of our country out of the debate because they are not welcome. All right. In a slave society, you can't allow those who resist to have a platform for debate because public dialogue destroys tyranny. Okay? That's why there are free speech laws. That's why you can't be arrested for speaking your mind. Oh, well, now you can.
It wasn't even tyranny. A debate, Vinny. It was a half-hour thing. I thought, okay, it's going to be on close-up. It's going to be like an hour-long special, 2 hours maybe. No. It was half-hour, like 20 minutes in between the ads, and then the ads in between the ads were just Len Brown and Banks trying to win an insult war. You want an insult war? I'll give you an insult war, Banksy, you little mason, you dirty little coward. I mean, you know, if he is an example of Auckland New Zealand Freemasonry, him being high and mighty, look at the things he said over the past. Look up John Banks quotes. He said, women all belong in the kitchen. He's this complete misogynist. he's, like, there's no honour and chivalry, and we're a chivalric, you know, we're a loyal order. So yeah, and we respect the women. They're of the Eastern Star and all this crap. Like, he's a complete bigot. Racist. He said we want more police to come down and stomp down on Aucklanders with an iron fist last night in the debate. He said the way we need to counter these drunks is just to empower the police and so we can really crack down on them in a fascistic way, you know?
Welcome to the New Zealand World Order. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends.
Yep.
Smile right to my
Welcome
face.
Back. We've been talking about scumbags. Scumbag Banks. The wannabe mayor of Auckland City under Agenda 21. And I've been thrown out of a council meeting by this mother effer. I've been insulted by him. And he's
Don't
just
forget he called his goons. He called his goons on us one day.
Yeah. And he's a joke, frankly. And you know the kind of politician I'm talking about, everybody. The kind of scumbag that doesn't say anything, doesn't do anything, except be evil, right? And everybody knows that they're a joke. And whenever somebody publicly makes fun of them, the whole crowd laughs at them. Every single time this guy goes into a debate and somebody you know, takes a dig at him, the whole audience cracks up laughing. Because that's just how big of a joke they are. Okay? And everybody's got these kind of politicians in their counties, in their countries, and in their cities. These type of scumbags deserve to be ridiculed, okay? quite literally. Don't give them any credibility. You know, because you're just empowering your own enslavement otherwise. Wouldn't that be nice? Not about you, Will, but I love being a slave. You know, I wouldn't have it any other way. Why would I want freedom? Why would I want to have a democratic say in what happens with my city as it gets taken over by international banksters in the UN? Why would I want to do that? You know, that would just be me being negative, wouldn't it? Well, because scumbag, filth, oh, God.
This is the thing with the world, though, Vinny. Isn't it just everything is a microcosm? Everything is, yeah, everything is just like Russian dolls. So here in Auckland, New Zealand, it's the same as the UN and the US and how they played off against each other. We've got John Banks as the US, as the fake conservative who wants to impose basically force in order to get his way and clean up the streets. Look, John Banks, I agree that there are drunks running around doing bad things. I agree there's a lot of chaos and crime and everything else. But I don't agree with pinpointing certain races and blaming them. I don't agree with insulting those people personally. I don't agree with then saying we need to empower all the police as a former police commissioner, as you are, and give them M16s and go around killing everyone. Or, you know, that's the ultimate expansion of what you're trying to say. But I know he's going to capture a lot of votes and probably get elected on the basis of all the people who support that sort of stuff. Yeah, I'm sick of those bums. Yeah, I'm sick of those bludgers. Yeah. You know, and all those types who think they're politically aware because they can get angry at a perceived enemy.
Yeah,
not
and what,
really, any
what really annoyed me about that debate with them is that when the voting happened, they had 9,000 text votes in, okay, and John Banks got 49%, Len Brown got 8%. And I thought to myself, you know what, John Banks, that might actually encourage him, which is interestingly because other polls that have been shown show that the vast majority want neither of these bloody scum. You know?
But it is going to be between them, sadly enough. I'm dealing with the reality. One of those two is going to be ruling. And we're just going to go after them again, Vinny. We're going to go after the mayor with a camera when they're newly elected. And whether we get the tyrant who wants to rule with an iron fist, or we get the soft, loving UN eugenicist, Len Brown, it's just all over, folks. And you know, that's what they're going to have. They're going to have the whole city as a conglomerate under their reign of terror, and it's just going to be about 100 of us, a band of lonely soldiers going after them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and we're going to alienate a lot of other people in different activist mm-hmm. movements in the city by taking this stand. But I don't give an F. All right.
If we're going to alienate
these
people,
guys
like
are taking
Bradbury.
Over our. Oh. These guys are taking over our city. Okay. Period. They're stealing mm-hmm. my kids' assets. My parents and I have paid for all of those assets, and I'm not going to let them be taken away by an enormous bloody foreign corporation like Veolia. And I'm certainly not going to allow scumbags like John Banks and Len Brown, who basically suck off the UN. To rule my city, to rule my country, you know? This is what respect is about, man. You don't walk into somebody's house and just take their TV right in front of them and say, hey, vote for me. Do you? You know? Get up and kick that guy right in the face. He's not... I mean, come on. They're doing it anyway. What have you got to lose? You know? We're going to ambush these scumbags with our cameras. And I've got plenty of stock footage of old Banksy being ridiculed and being mean to me. You know, let's discredit these scumbags. Show them for the real tyranny traitors that they are. Okay? Because there's only really two choices or three choices or whatever. You know, it's like I want to give a protest vote to Penny Bright or I want to vote for my own enslavement and Len Brown. Or I want to vote for my own enslavement with John Banks. You know, that's your choice. Protest vote or enslavement. Colin Craig, you know, I think he's a good guy and all, but he's not going to win. Neither is John Banks. I mean, well, maybe John Banks, hopefully not. And Penny Bright probably ain't going to win either. Okay? Why? Because they stand for what's right. And those who stand for what's right don't get the backing of the media. Okay?
Well, John Beck
because
stands for what's right. You kidding?
A right in the fascist sense of the word, and the political spectrum sense of the word, the false left-right paradigm sense of the word. Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. You know? But, I mean, it is between John Banks. I think it's 50-50 between Banks and Brown, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Banks
and
has a big silent
vote. Reality. However, here's the alternative, okay? There is what Penny Bright wants to do is just use this election campaign as a platform to get herself some other people to join her in a rights revolt, to get this legislation repealed, to get our assets back, to stop acquiescing to the government, to stop being a cash cow for international corporate financing arms of the Rothschild dynasty. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio, and we're kind of fired up today, and we'll be right back after the break.
There's no civilians, women, children, front lines, listen. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Future. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. That's the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question, apparently. Like nobody asks it anymore. Hey, we're going to go down, we're doing a road trip today. Ladies and gentlemen, me, Will, and our executive producer, Mitch, cruising a little bit down the country to meet a fellow truther who's running a radio show, radio station, actually, in New Zealand, who wants to rebroadcast the show. So we'll be going international. Isn't that fabulous? Yeah, basic idea of any show, really, is to spread it out as wide as possible, I think. Well, that's secondary to actually having somebody who cares about the general public. You know, I'm kind of very concerned that the New World Order is taking over and taking over quickly. So that means that the resistance has to grow and grow very, very quickly indeed in order to counteract such actions. And this means, you know, to a certain extent, there's the old business model of the New World Order about rapid expansion and, you know, tactical resistance, et cetera, et cetera. And the complications are endless, quite literally. Personally, I'm just kind of keen to, you know, get up and play around with the New World Order on a daily basis. You know, that's all I want to do. Just have some fun with them. They're scumbags. They don't deserve for me to respect them. You know, I'll act like a bully like I was in high school. Because these clowns have about the IQ of a teenager doped up on all the GMOs and pharmaceuticals. And they deserve to be taken down. Preferably as quickly as freaking possible. Because they're just that dangerous. You know? And people don't understand. Well, a lot of people don't. I'm sure the intelligent audience that we have here at American Freedom Radio certainly get it. That's the most important fight of our lives. Probably one. In fact, I would even wager humanity versus the New World Order in this day and age is the most important conflict in world history ever. Now, I could be wrong about that.
I've got to go, guys, but
yeah,
I'll catch you Will's off tomorrow. For the
All right. Thank you, Will, for coming on with us. I'll still be here, ladies and gentlemen, for the whole of the second hour. We'll be right back. To introduce to you our very special guest, Tim Selwyn from 2MECHAIR at 2MECHAIR.blogspot.com. That's T-U-M-E-K-E.blogspot.com. One of the great blogs that we have here running in New Zealand that kind of really what I prefer to say about 2MECHAIR.
Is yeah, that a yes, Vinny, go ahead.
Well, it kind of just takes the piss, you know, makes fun of these scumbag politicians whilst at the same time covering very serious issues. Not
well, there's so much
material. Similar from my own approach.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of material, Vinny, as you know. Yeah. These scumbag politicians, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
There's tons of them. There's only 123 and 122 in Parliament at the moment, but, you know, if you take local body politicians as well, you know, it widens the net. There's actually quite a few.
Oh, yeah. No wonder the sewage systems are all blocked up in Christchurch, you know, because there's all this politician filth running through them, you know?
Yeah, well, the apparently the builder man Bob Parker there is ahead in the polls. Unbelievable, isn't it? He was absolutely toast coming into it. Then they have a 7.1 earthquake, and then all of a sudden he's back in with a shot now just because he wears a fluoro jacket hoisted up around the, you know, with the arms rolled up and with an impressive-looking lanyard. And walks around devastated scenes in front of TV, pointing to things and looking serious. And that's done him a world of good. Now he's ahead in the polls and looks like old man Anderton, the challenger there, the lefty, is going to be toast because he's dialed back his campaign and let builder man Bob take over. Don't know if you've been following that at all, Vinny, whether you care about Christchurch at all. Do you?
Well, my man Blair Anderson, who gave us a live report from Christchurch as the quake had first hit, he's the person I'd vote for if I was in the Christchurch mayoral election, because he doesn't want the fluoride and he wants to make sure that the river is kept clean and wants to weed out corruption and, interestingly enough, get weed legalised in Christchurch. It'll be very good for the tourists.
Yeah, well, he's a good man. He does a good thing. He's got an interesting blog. He's very good on his subject matter, that's for sure. There's also a few other people there who've been keeping an eye on what they call Sideshow Bob and his antics involving, and you talk about corruption there, involving this interesting chap called David Henderson, Hendo Henderson, and the dodgy property deals done in Christchurch. This is obviously before the earthquake. And Bob's team on the council there signed off on bailing this Hendo guy out by buying a lot of his properties around town, totally overvalued. People were criticising them at the time as being a shonky deal with insider property developer mates. And so they had this big earthquake, a lot of liquefaction, and the Canterbury Plains basically wanting to rid itself of humanity. And a lot of these Hendo properties that the council bought off him have actually collapsed and have to be demolished. And it turns out that that there's hardly any insurance on it. Basically, it's only insured for the cost of the demolition. So the poor old people of Christchurch, via their Mayor Bob Parker and his block of councillors there, have cost the ratepayers here an absolute fortune, and it's been one disaster after another for them. And it's just one of these, you know, it's just one of these things that happen in local body politics where not many people actually do care, and even less turn out to vote, and then you get these dodgy decisions being made. And as I said, well, you get a guy in a fluoro jacket with his arms rolled up in front of the TV cameras every night, you know, for the last four and a half weeks now, and that sways public
coverage. Free campaign coverage.
Exactly. And that sways public opinion. I mean, he's been all over the media, and yet he hasn't. He doesn't want to debate his main rival, Jim Anderton, in any forum format whatsoever, you know, because then because Jim Anderton will obviously ask him about dodgy property deals of this Hendo guy and so on and so forth, and it's he would rather just be posing in front of ruined bits of the city.
He's like the Berlusconi of the South Island, you know. Just for goodness sake, corrupt to the core. What's all going on here? And the other element is with all these suburbs and stuff that have been blanketed over because of the huge amount of liquefaction, which is when, you know, for those of you who don't know, just all the kind of soil where your houses are on just kind of turns to mush, you know, and then you can't really rebuild on it because they were all built on, like, what, 6 inches of soil on just nothing but sand, you know?
Yeah.
You know, this was another dodgy council deal where they made entire suburbs built on places like this, and now they're talking about the insurance companies voiding it, you know, because of the dodginess. And all these poor Christchurch residents who have had their homes destroyed are now having to worry about whether or not they can even have a place to live at all.
And whether they can ever get insurance again, because now everyone knows what happens in these places. Well, no one's going to give them insurance, are they? They're on their own at a time when, obviously, you know, who's going to pay for the repairs of their house and everything, especially some of them, the people renting, because it's the landlords who get the earthquake commission money. But the poor old renters there, well, everything's trashed. They have to move out of the house. And so there's been a huge demand, you know, as you can imagine, with rental accommodation there because, you know, everyone's, you know, the houses are damaged. Some of them have been what they call red stickered, which means they're not fit for human habitation. But, I mean, what option have people got, you know? And then that's the trouble, is people have actually gone back into their houses and said, well, I know it's probably not fit for habitation. And if you look at the seismographs and everything, Christchurch is undergoing frequent aftershocks, you know, and they're still going. And that's the thing. And it's, well, what's the tipping point where part of the house is going to fall down, you know? What is that little shock, that tremor that is going to send the rest of the chimney falling down? But people have got no option. They've got no option. And it was interesting.
Absolutely not. And goodness knows what this will do to the Canterbury economy, you know. What are the wider implications here? I mean, it's been speculated that this quake single-handedly has destroyed the economy of Christchurch, and that Christchurch supports the entire region's economy, and that it may never recover because of this quake.
Yeah, it will take years to cover, and there's also been criticism of people like Sideshow Bob, in that they've kept people away from, they've actively advertised basically to get people out of the Christchurch Central Business District. In fact, they had the whole thing cordoned off for many, many days. The whole city was just a police zone because they were paranoid about looters and about people being crushed by the falling masonry and stuff because a lot of the buildings were damaged. But there was a report that a lot of the retailers there have been very saddened that they have kept on advertising that you shouldn't go into the city because it's absolutely killed their businesses. And this is the CBD here. This is the main, what people have been doing is going to the shopping malls, which is all very corporate and all very fine and all very safe. But it's absolutely killed business in downtown Christchurch, as you were saying. I mean, it's going to be a huge hit to the economy.
Yeah. Think about the club scene. There's now a 7 p.m. curfew onwards. And if you are seen on the streets and you don't have identification or if you're not working there or something like that, you get arrested instantly, okay? And they've got military personnel throughout the city now checking everybody's IDs, you know, coming in. And this is deeply concerning to me because it sets the precedent for the military coming in to police the general population. And the crisis ain't really that bad as to require non-civilian personnel to police the population. After all, the population in Christchurch have been very subdued about the whole thing. Very strong, very hardy, and very tidy, and very orderly people. There's no need for troops to be there, but instead they're doing this. And also on top of that, we've got Jerry Brownlee passing laws saying that it's perfectly okay to shoot looters, even though the only instances of looters were on the very morning of the earthquake, when a couple of, you know, young teenagers threw a brick through a window and tried to steal a television.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And the law, it doesn't even... Yes, and that law that you were talking about with this Cabinet Minister Jerry Brownlee there, whose electorate happens to be in Christchurch, so that's why he was put in charge. You know, as we were saying in that in the last podcast, I think it was, Vinny, about... The law that they rushed through Parliament and that every single parliamentarian agreed to, just unbelievable, said that because of the Christchurch earthquake, for the next, whatever it is, 18 months, they can suspend any law or change any law except for just the six key constitutional laws like the Constitution Act, etc. But everything like the Crimes Act, as you were saying, the people saying the Abolition of the Death Penalty Act, right, could also be, right, suspended. You know, you talk about shooting people on site. And this is for the next 18 months, which includes, obviously, the next couple of weeks is still the election period for the local body politics. The next 18 months, looking out, also includes the general election that will definitely happen next year. And, yes, it's totally unrestricted. They've listed the ones, the laws that they think might need to be changed, but it says is not limited to these laws, right? And the only ones excluded are things like the Constitution Act and the Electoral Act. But everything else is, as you're saying, is up for grabs, and it's all under this Jerry Brownlee guy who, I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, he would be one of the last people that I'd be entrusting anything to as far as draconian powers of go. And, yeah, and the military are on the ground, you know. These are live issues for us. And the fact is that the Christchurch Earthquake Recovery Act, I think is what the official name of it is basically the sort of thing that the Nazis passed after they fitted that guy up for burning down the Reichstag as soon as they got into power, and it suspended all of the civil liberties and so on and so forth. It was up to the discretion of the government to use it at the time, and of course they did. We're assuming here, as the Green Party and the lefties and everyone else who voted for this Christchurch law went through, that we won't use it, that Jerry Brownlee and the Tories and Rodney Hyde of the ACT Party and so forth won't be using these draconian powers because they can. They're on the statute books. It says that the powers cannot be challenged in any court of law. You know what I mean? There's no comeback on these things. The only thing we've really got is Parliament itself to hopefully convene and do something about it should something go awry.
Oh, you're just being negative, Tim.
Look at the bright side. You know, hey, summer's coming up. Everything will be wonderful.
Yeah. You know, just go outside and have a barbecue, mate. Don't worry about it, okay? I'm sure our corpulent Jabba the Hutt lookalike winner contest, Jerry Brownlee, will do very, very nice things for everybody with his new fandangled dictatorial power.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're calling him Jerry the Eighth. He is, you know. This is, you know, like a la Henry the Eighth, you know. And he does, there is a bit of a resemblance there. There's also a bit of a resemblance to Mark Lundy, the psycho killer as well, actually, but we won't go into that. The other interesting thing...
Jerry! I don't give a care about democracy. No way! I'm a dictatorial tyrant. I'm Jerry. I'm Jerry the Eighth, I am.
The other interesting thing has been the farmers down there have wanted to... Then this just struck me as unbelievable. They wanted the farmers... You know, people complain, okay, their houses have fallen down and everything, and legally, you know, there's this thing called the Earthquake Commission set up so that the first, I think it's $100,000 worth of damage to the house is covered. And then I think it's up to about $50,000 of property, other property or land damage is part of the coverage in the Act. This is if you've got house insurance, by the way. If you don't, unfortunately, you're on your own. But so there's that bit of the damage, and there's also about up to $20,000 worth of contents damage, I think. And that's fine. And then I read that some of the farmers were complaining that their land had cracks in it and that they wanted money for that. Now, this is Christchurch, mind you. I don't know if people don't know the Canterbury Plains. It's basically dead flat. It's probably the most boring, it's certainly the most boring piece of road I've ever been on. If you drive south of Christchurch, you just keep going down this very, very flat, basically straight sets of roads that just keep going forever. It's the most tedious drive
with
ever.
With farms either side, but I do like the mountain backdrop.
Yeah. If you look the other way, yeah, but a lot of them have got, a lot of this drive has got big... shelter belts and so forth of trees, so you can't actually see it.
Yeah,
over large stretches, and they should lift the speed limit there to totally unlimited, I reckon, because it's so boring. People should just bang, get through it as fast as they can. I don't blame people for breaking the speed limit there. Honestly, it is such a tedious bloody drive. Anyway, it's dead flat in Canterbury Plains, and here are the farmers whinging that there's some cracks in their farm, and they want the Earthquake Commission to, I don't know what they're going to do, get some lads around there and fill in the little cracks in the ground with some soil or something from the liquefaction area, maybe. I mean,
yeah, just be like, hey, guys, we're really, really sorry that your ridiculously huge farm has a singular crack running through it in the middle of one of or two of your fields. So what we're going to do then, we're just going to, you know, don't fill it in with shovels or anything like that. Don't get a gang together and, you know, just solve the problem yourself. Just go to the government. I'm sure they'll save you.
Oh, those whinging farmers are in New Zealand we always say, you know, whinging farmers. I suppose you see it all over the world, actually, especially in places like France, you know. You want your typical whinging farmers, you go to France. I mean, at least they really do something about it over there. But here, yeah, they're whinging farmers. Anything that happens, any normal event, not just a natural catastrophe such as this, but any natural event happens and they're sticking their fucking hand out, their hand out, FCC,
or
their hand
family
out.
Family show, family show.
Sorry, okay. Their hand out for it, for money. And you get the same situation down in Southland, Vinny, which has had a snowstorm. Now, they called this a category something weather event or something, right?
Yeah.
And all it was basically some snow fell and some of their lambs died. And here they were. Well, this happens every year. I mean, it's called winter.
Yep, you know how to... and you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Winter is no excuse. We'll be right back. To the show that's about resistance. Resistance to scum, filth, dodgy political swine, and the New World Order.
But not about swearing, of course.
Yeah. That's what the podcast is.
I thought it was a podcast. In New Zealand time, it's very early in the morning, especially for me, because we've just had daylight savings here. We've just had daylight savings. I was reading actually that Fiji is also going to have daylight savings, but they're near the equator. What's a country doing having daylight saving that's near the equator? I mean, what is the point of that? And then I was also reading on the issue of daylight savings, because I believe it's been put back. You know, they changed it about 3 years ago, and they moved daylight savings forward and back at either end so that we get more time and daylight saving. I still think, Vinnie, it's a week too early for us. I don't mind the autumn. That's good. We get an extra couple of weeks in the autumn. And usually, at least here in Auckland, up here in the north of New Zealand, we have quite a nice Indian summer, quite usually. And then that's fine with me. But having it put back 1 week here in the spring is just a bit too early, mate. I don't know how you feel about that, because now it's dark when you wake up in the morning and everything. Is it worth it?
Well, dude, you know, you're talking to the wrong person about this, because...
Well, the government's told you when you wake up, basically, right?
Yeah, well, when I started on American Freedom Radio, I was co-hosting a show called the Global Freedom Report a while back. The show times that we were starting at was 4 till 6 a.m. local time, and, you know, pretty dedicated I am. And then we got bumped up, and as I started the Vinnie Eastwood Show, it was from 6 to 8 a.m. And now, thanks to our, what's it called,
Daylight Savings,
it's 7 till 9. And by the end of October, I believe, as the United States goes into their Daylight Savings, I will have to broadcast from 8 till 10. So essentially, as these, I'm really happy about these time zone differences and the daylight savings, because it means that, hey, I'll be able to get more sleep and be able to stay up later.
Well, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't on the other end. And it's a constant thing. We were talking about your whinging, your classic whinging farmers there before. They've always complained that the daylight savings affects them because more, especially the dairy farmers, because the milk trucks and stuff come around, you know, obviously an hour earlier, everything's an hour earlier, and they're already up, I mean, really early, right? I mean, about 5 a.m. or 4:30 or 4 a.m. or whatever it is that they wake up. So it gets pushed back to 3, you know what I mean? I mean, we're talking really early, but I just can't understand why they just don't, in those cases, delay the delivery trucks and everything for an hour. Maybe farmers are thick or something. I don't, you know, I mean, maybe they are really thick. I don't understand why. It's like when the weather, you know, the weather event we call winter happened, and they were sticking their hands out there to the government to give them monetary assistance and so forth because it snowed a bit and some of their lambs died. And you go, well, why don't you build a shelter for them a little bit? You know, because it happens every single year. Maybe you should, you know, build some shelter. But that hasn't occurred to them, apparently. You know, I mean, you know, why can't they delay certain things at certain times? But anyway, it hits them pretty hard. So I was also looking at daylight savings and thinking, well, actually, Antarctica, our little bit of Antarctica, which includes the McMurdo American base down there, which is next door to our base, Ross Base, is it, down there, they also are on New Zealand times. So I was wondering, do they also have daylight savings time there? And if it's Antarctica, because it's a bit weird, do they have, like, more than 1 hour or something? You know, it's funny, isn't it, the government can actually dictate what time of day it is. It's absolutely spooky. The major issue, though, Vinny, happening, it's just about to happen, actually, on Friday here, tomorrow, and you probably talked about it before on your show, is the GST increase. What's your take on that, Vinny? Gives the goods and services tax going up from 12.5% to 15% tomorrow.
Yeah, the American audience will know this as a general sales tax, okay? And we've had this for quite some time now. I believe it was instituted back in the 80s, was it, Tim? And,
yeah, 1980s. Oh, yeah, because
I... And the New Zealand public... The New Zealand public were told that once we institute this general sales tax, there'll never be another tax increase again. You know, we'll have more than enough revenue to accomplish whatever we want. And of course... We've got John Key on his election campaign in 2008 saying that GST will never increase under my government. And then what does he do? He increases GST under his government. And he says, hey, we don't really need this emissions trading scam, you know, and all this kind of stuff in partnership with the ACT Party. And then what do? They pass the emissions trading scam, you know, and people still don't get it. There's actually still a lot of popularity of this national government, despite the fact that they've been caught lying so many times that the mind reels.
Yeah, well, especially with the GST, because it was a direct question, wasn't it? And I think it was put a couple of times to him during the, or before the, or at the time of the election campaign, which is in 2008. And he said, will you increase GST? And he goes, no. I mean, there was no equivocation. There was no, you know, political fudging and hedge words or whatever. It was a straight out, no, we will not be increasing the GST. Simple as that, wasn't it? And here you go, he increased it. Well, I mean, we talk about 1987 when it was first instituted. What it did, GST, was replace all of the various sales taxes that we had accumulated over time. So we had different taxes on different things and at different rates and, I don't know, at different times. And, you know, it was a mess. And it was difficult to administer and so forth. And so they said, well, let's aim for simplicity here. Let's copy some of these other countries that have what they call a value-added tax, a VAT.
That sounds like a contrived crisis so that they can propose a tax solution to me.
Well, this is what they've done here, Vinny, this year, and what they're going to do tomorrow is a contrived crisis. Totally, because there's no reason for it. But back in the old days, this is before your time, but back in the old days, yes, it was a complex system. Some things were exempted, some things were included, some things were taxed at a higher rate and a lower rate, and yes, it was a mess. And so they said, well, let's simplify it. Let's put 10% on basically everything except every good and service in New Zealand except for rent, which was an excellent idea. And if it wasn't a Labor government, they probably would have put it on rent too. But rent is GST exempt. Also, anything to do with financial instruments is also largely GST exempt. So money itself, interest payments, gold, fine gold is also exempt. But that's basically it. Very, very few exemptions. And so within... It was in 2 years later.
Hold on a second. So there are exemptions, and yet
there are exemptions.
When the Labor government comes in and says, "Let's make food exempt, let's make healthy food exempt," the national government says, "Then it's too complicated."
Oh, exactly. So there's issues there. But within 2 years of the GST being introduced at 10%, 2 years later they put it up to 12.5%. You know, and because they wanted the cash and they were in trouble, etc. And that super spiked inflation again. That kept inflation higher again. And then we had this draconian boss of the Reserve Bank called Don Brash, who later took over the National Party as its leader, and he just slammed down hard, caused a massive recession, put tens of thousands of people out of work, caused massive unemployment there, but he managed to bring the inflation rate down with a thud to between 1% and 2%, as was the target in those days, 0% to 2%. And that was catastrophic on a personal level for tens or, in fact, hundreds of thousands of workers. But economically, if you look at the numbers and the indicators, it was all fine, you know. If you look at it in black and white, you go, well, you've got a GST 12.5, you've got inflation between 0% to 2%. Everything should be tickety-boo. And, of course, everything's not tickety-boo because you killed the economy in between doing that. And we had all this unemployment. I mean, it's just an absolute waste because, you know, they're all getting the dole instead of being out there producing things. And a lot of industry in this country was lost because of it. And there's a big argument now, historically at least, about how hard you hit the brakes. And this is coming around this time around because we get the same thing happening here. 87, we had a boom, right? Then 89 and 91, we had a bust. And then we can say, well, we've got the same thing here, actually, funnily enough. The exact same scenario is happening. We've had a boom in the mid-2000s. Now we've had a bust, and now we're putting up the GST again and go, haven't we learned our lessons at all? That now is the absolute wrong time to put up GST. The sales tax going up. I mean, the sales tax has gone up by 20% effectively, if you think about it, going 12.5 to 15%. And you're going, this is coming at the worst time because we are in what I would describe as a depression, not just a recession, but a depression, and inflation will spike, of course it will, beyond what the GST increase is going to do, because those price points at the lower end of consumer goods, because we got rid of our 5-cent piece, now we only have a 10-cent piece, right? And this is what I argued when they did this in 2006, is that because we now only have a 10-cent piece and not a 5-cent piece, all the prices are going to basically have to go up another 10 cents. There is no 5-cent option. So all of those small things, the necessaries in life, the inelastic demand, right? Milk, bread, you know, and things like a newspaper and so forth, and the bus fares, which are going to go up on Sunday, by the way, Vinny, they all have to go up by at least 10 cents and maybe 20 cents, et cetera, right?
So well, we're going to get... For goodness sake!
Well, it's going to ratchet... The thing is, it's an endless ratchet up.
I know!
And you look at the UK, Vinny. Look what they did as well. This is under when the Lib Dems joined the Conservatives there. Their first bloody budget they put through... They've ratcheted the VAT there up from, I think it was it 17.5% to 20%. And it's an endless ratchet if we look at how it operates around the world. These general sales tax or value-added tax, whatever you want to call it, they never go down, they only go up. So my argument is let's make sure they never go up. And what's the reason for them going up, Vinny? You've heard what the Treasurer is saying? Oh, it's good because it targets spending, which is bad, right? Which is bad for the economy, and it will reward earning. In other words, they're going to take the tax off the high-income earners, and they're going to pretend that that's going to be more productive than what they're doing now, which is, you know, which it was before with a low GST rate, effectively. And transaction costs do matter. And at the margins, it does affect the ability of people to buy and to transact. And it's not just a matter of, you know, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, Vinny, how certain people look at the world. There's our treasurer there who's on, I don't know, 200 grand a year, giving himself tax breaks, right, by making sure that the top-level earners get a big slice back. And who's he hitting? He's putting up the GST. And who does the GST affect, Vinny? It affects people who can only spend their income and can't save it. And we call these people us, basically, the poor people, right? Because as soon as we get some money, we have to spend it. We're not making enough money to, I'm not making enough money, right, to actually save anything. I have to spend
the
money
that
I get, right? And I'm going to be hit by this GST, and it's absolutely for the consumer, right? Companies, they have a system whereby it's neutral for them, right? They can mark things down between company transactions, right? So it hits the consumer. It hits you and me. It hits us. It hits those poor people out there catching the bus. I mean, they can't do anything else, right? There is no option for them. And these are the guys who are going to be hit the hardest. And they are paying for these rich guys to get a tax cut. How on earth is that's the economy according to the Tory. You know, according to your rightist conservative type politician. And they think that's wonderful because he can apparently do more with his, I don't know, whatever it is, $50 a month or whatever tax cut than a poor person who's now going to have to pay an extra whatever it is, $20 a month for all of their expenses that have gone up. And I just don't buy the argument, Vinny. You know, I don't buy the argument that Bill English is going to be more productive with his money and is going to be more positive for the economy than forcing a poor person to be even poorer than they are now.
Yeah. Welcome, like I said before, welcome to the New Zealand World Order. We'll be right back.
I hope you like a jamming tune. I wanna jam it.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise.
Always gonna be a surprise. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Tim, someone from Two Mech here. And we're just talking over the break about Israel and the retards that support them. You know, and I got somebody, there's a video up on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com that I made called Boycott Israel and Get Arrested. And during the course of this video, there's a protest going on outside a tennis match in New Zealand, okay? And the protesters are basically just making a bit of noise, you know, with megaphones and blowing whistles.
Was that earlier this year? Was that last year?
That was early summer this year, around January. And
The Auckland Open, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the police came in and just arrested a whole bunch of people. I think over 2 days they arrested like 7 people or something like that, and the protest went on for a number of days, and the case is still in court. And then I get retards like this, Fred No Name One on YouTube, you know, criticizing me, saying, why don't you tell both sides of the story, use documents and blah, 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 blah. Did you know that Israel feeds most of Gaza? Well, yeah, of course they feed Gaza because they're the ones with the blockade going on and they're the only ones that can supply the food. You know? And then this is the bit that really gets me, is you claim to be anti-globalist, yet you take UN reports as gospel, and in brackets, the UN is globalist. And it's like, for F's sake, you know, people make judgments based upon no information all the time, especially pro-Israel scumbags, because they're retarded, pure and simple. If you think that Israel can do no wrong, you have had your brain shot with a vaccine. You know, you got mercury on the synapses, my friend. Shush. You don't know what you're talking about. You're retarded. Your opinion doesn't matter.
That's why I like watching Al Jazeera. Do you watch Al Jazeera at all?
On occasion, yeah, I do. And I like Russia Today as well, but yeah.
Yeah, Russia Today, although I like Russia Today for different reasons. But, yeah, Al Jazeera's obviously well-financed because the whatever it is, the emir, the sultan of, was it Qatar or whatever, has bankrolled it to the tune of mega millions. But it was interesting that they have discussions there, and they had a bit of Barack Obama's not a press conference. He was making just some remarks there in the White House, like sitting room or something, and he made a bit of a Freudian slip there. He was saying, because the issue was Israel's nuclear capacity, the Dimona nuclear reactor, and the hypocrisy of Israel not being in the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and that. I think Iran is, and yet, so Israel really shouldn't be criticising anyone, especially Iran. At least Iran's trying to do something and to come inside the international framework. You know,
especially because Israel has 300 plus nuclear warheads, and they're the most bullying military regime on earth, as far as I know, with the world's fourth strongest military, thanks to $3 billion a year of free military equipment from the United States.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the issue. And President Obama, they were just contrasting what he had said earlier with what he's saying recently. And earlier he was saying, you know, it's important that everyone join the NPT, that, you know, North Korea and Pakistan and India, who haven't joined, should join, and that Israel, you know, should be encouraged to join. And then he changed his tune later on, obviously, you know, he's... You know, with Bibi there, Netanyahu visiting, I think he stays in the, what they call the Sharon wing of the White House. And after these visits they keep having, and then he's changing it, and it was an interesting time sequence. You know, he's changing his tune on it. And it was and then it became all of a sudden, oh, unique, Israel has a unique security situation, right, as an excuse about why. And then he said something interesting. He said... he used the word us instead of it when referring to Israel.
Yeah,
and that
was
his little mistake. And you get these little Freudian slips, you know?
Don't you mean Freudian slips?
Yes, coming out when they talk about Israel almost as if it's part of the USA. And I'm thinking of terms of a Venn diagram. You know, about with things and how they overlap, and it's very hard to put where Israel and the US is as far as a Venn diagram goes, if you know what I mean. Is Israel?
It's impossible to tell where the United States ends and Israel begins. I mean, who was it?
Well, think about it.
Air Force General said that if I wanted to tell the president something and I didn't want Israel to find out about it, I'd wait until I saw the president next. All right, they tapped into absolutely everything. Look at the cabinet of the United States. All of them, bankers from Goldman Sachs, or their dual citizenship with Israel people. You know, what's going on here? Is the United States even the United States anymore? No, it's the USI, United States of Israel.
So, and you think of a Venn diagram, well, is Israel the small circle inside the bigger US, or is the US a small circle inside the bigger Israel, right? Or is Israel a bit of an overlap of equal size with the US, and there's an overlap between them, and that overlap is actually quite big, in which, yes, you could put the American cabinet, both main political parties inside there, a lot of business... interests, media, and so forth. You know, you really don't know where you stand, do you?
Yeah, and in New Zealand, we've got our Prime Minister and most of the other big business roundtable heads seen at pro-Zionist rallies and meetings and such like this, where they can rub shoulders with other scum, you know? This is the world, ladies and gentlemen. If you're an evil scumbag, filth bag, who decides that it's really brilliant to suppress and slaughter and rape countries and economies to no end, you must be from Israel. And you must love that stuff. Tim, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks, Vinny. It's always good to talk, and, always enjoy it, mate.
Yeah. I mean, it's generally pleasurable to insult the globalists and all their minions. Intel Hub, ladies and gentlemen, coming up next with Shep. Always great guests on there, and we'll see you tomorrow.